Hey guys, welcome to this week's edition of Wrestling with Deaths. I am, of course, your ghost host with the most, the Reaper Matt Connard. And this week on the podcast, my guest is a lover of cats, a lover of comedy. He is one half of the tag team System Elite, a member, founding member, I might add, of the Black Hand Society, and above all other accolades, he's my buddy. So let's welcome to the show, Ty Cross.
That's the my favorite title that I carry with me.
What, that you're my
Matt
buddy?
Connard's buddy.
No, I don't think too many people would be happily admit to that. So.
I mean, anytime you can have a buddy that you know is going to go further than you, and you can just kind of coattail off of that, that's pretty tight.
Please. It's mostly the inexperienced kids that don't know any better yet. And once they learn better, they're like, fuck, that Connard guy's a freak. I think the last time, the first attempt I made at this podcast, I had you and Edric back when we were still at the Eagles at the bar. Like,
and we had to do that run-in.
Yeah.
We got interrupted halfway through by Marbell. You guys are supposed to be coming up for a run-in for Russo. It's like, oh no, we had to pause it, and everyone was none the wiser because of your editing skills until just now when I brought it back up.
Yeah, thanks for, well, no one can go back and hear that. I removed all of them from history.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Clean slate.
I wanted to listen to it again. I was excited, but
it's okay. Fuck you.
It's okay.
Not gonna happen. That was, what, three years ago, maybe?
Yeah, probably, like 2014.
Man.
Isn't that crazy?
Been that long since we've lost the Eagles.
Yeah.
And now we're here in fucking Moundsville in this moldy back room.
That's so ridiculous. God, we've come so far, dude.
Man, I miss the Eagles.
We've gone from Moldy Wheeling to Moldy Moundsville.
Well, at least Moldy Wheeling had a personality to it.
Yeah, it was our Moldy Wheeling.
We were doing something there.
That was,
That's our ECW arena.
It really was.
Like, we were doing something special.
That's the hard part about losing a place like what we had in Wheeling is it was what it was, but like, then you got to find somewhere and start fresh.
Right.
And that's what, you know.
Haven't done that yet.
Which, you know, you're trying. We're trying.
And most of the places we work aren't fresh at all.
No.
Like I said, moldy building.
There's not a lot of freshness. I don't open this up and there's not like a Febreze that hits me. It's mold. But, you know, whatever.
And my comptroller herself covering her mouth because this room stinks.
I'm willing to make myself sick just to do this. I'm happy you guys are willing to make yourself sick just to put me on the air.
The thing she goes through to help me. You can laugh. It's okay to laugh. Laughter's healthy.
Well, I love this trip down memory lane. The only other podcast I sat in on was System Elite down in the bar.
That's
is that the only other one?
Yep.
Oh, that's really fun.
I forgot you were there for that.
Yeah, you know, I remember.
Back that building was special. It had a personality. It was called Asbestos.
Yeah.
That is, of course, my comptroller and fiance, Corinne. My muse, my flame.
God, I don't know why, but I immediately started going into the whole Princess Bride, the Mowage thing. Mowage! I don't know why that led me to it, but in my head I started thinking about that. It was really funny.
I assume that's where your and Emily's wedding is going to go.
Yeah. Mowage!
Mowage! Hello. All right, this is going to have a great start. There's a lot of stuff that's went down those 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, you're in a way different place now than you were when we talked last.
Yeah.
Like, aside from the massive loss to the Eagles, I mean, we've collectively gone to and left companies.
As a group.
How do you think you've evolved, like, in those 3 years? Like, where do you think, compared to where you were then, you are now? Are you better? Are you worse?
I mean, I don't think my body works as well. I don't know if I was ever any good. I don't know if I'm any good now, but I think I'm smarter.
And you're fine.
I'm like, thank you. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm any better in 3 years. But I know I think I'm a lot smarter. It's a lot easier to make make good brother jokes now that you're a good brother.
Yeah.
I think like right around you hit 6-7 years, become a good brother. You start doing this a lot more.
Oh,
like, slapping your arms.
Yeah.
I was doing that in the gym the other day.
Well.
There was no one in the gym, so I was just listening to the music I wanted and just Ric Flairing around the gym. But. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's not so much where my growth has gone, because I don't really know, but I think it's fun that our group in that 3 years has gotten so much tighter, that if I take anything out of this when I'm done, it's the fact that I made a lot of really good friends that I didn't have starting out. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. In 3 years, I've found a group that I feel comfortable with,
right,
to travel with, to, you know, find bookings with, to right, just even outside of wrestling hang out with. So I think in 3 years, the biggest thing I've grown on is that I, you know, my comfort around people that I know.
Right. That's really all you take from all you really take from wrestling anymore.
Yeah.
Aside from injuries.
Yeah.
Is friendships. Like all these fake accolades that we collect throughout our careers, they're nothing to hold on to. There's nothing to really right, grasp at. All you have are the people that you grow close with and grow these bonds with.
Exactly.
So whenever it is you decide to hang it up, which in some cases you really find out who your real friends are
right,
when it's time to walk away, because when you're not in those locker rooms every week, they're going to forget yeah, about you? Like, are you going to stop getting texts and shit? Unless you're in a group text. And
and I look down on my phone, I got 72 missed right, texts.
Your phone's halfway dead already and you just started your shift.
I used to have to leave my phone at my desk when I would go to meetings, because I would sit in a Monday morning meeting
right,
and it would just go voot, 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 all day. The whole meeting. And my boss would go, can you just leave
can
your
phone? Can you put
phone?
That on silent?
Can you just leave it in your desk or something? Because I'm sick of hearing it.
Can you
it,
just fuck off?
Basically. I pretty much got that, but that, yeah, it's neither here nor there. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I got this Fitbit thing that's connected to my phone now that like lets me read text and shit.
Yeah.
And every fuck it vibrates when I get one. So when you guys are really on a tear, my fucking wrist. Hold on.
That I have completely do not disturb that group text. The only group text that isn't do not disturb is Markman and Edric, and the right, only reason that's not is because it's two of them.
Right.
And when they start to go, I'll flip it like that.
Right.
And it's just because I check my phone frequently enough that I try not to miss too much.
Yeah.
But I keep all you guys on Do Not Disturb.
I really don't even reply to those unless I have something like racially charged to say.
Right.
Unless I can shock and awe you guys, I really don't want to comment. I have nothing of value to say.
Yeah. I mean, that's really funny. I don't think you have nothing of value. I think you have nothing of...
Nothing... Think... You guys are saying everything I would say.
Exactly.
So I can't comment.
Exactly.
As a character,
mm-hmm,
back when we last talked, you were still... This was about the time you and Edric were about to... Or if you hadn't already.
We were in the middle of feuding with the Fantastic Ones. So we were probably like 4 months from splitting. Or we just done Fans Bring the Weapons. So I forget how long it was from Fans Bring the Weapons to...
Black Hand Formation?
The Annie Show.
Right.
And then from the Annie Show, it was the next month, was the Black Hand Formation. But, and that was the cool thing about that, was when we did the split, the biggest thing we wanted to do was so many tag teams break up.
Right.
And then are against each other, or go one way and go the other way.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to do it where we can break up and stay together. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, like, that's what the Black Hand thing was, is, like, we feud with Peyton and we feud with Pollock, and then that feud is what has to split us against our own accord. So we decide, like, hey, if we're going to be separated, let's connect with this tag team that we know is the best in the company because they beat us, and that's what we were.
Right.
And let's just find out what we can do separate, but as a unit, since we all work so well together. And that was what the Black Hand, the whole idea was for it. And I mean, it's the most fun I've had, yeah, you know.
Looking back on it now, like, I could have this convo with any of you guys,
right,
as a guy from the outside looking in on the whole thing.
Yeah.
What is the Black Hand, what did the Black Hand mean at the time when you guys first, like, presented it? And what does it mean now that the... Run's kind of not over, but it's in its twilight. Like, it's not exactly, you guys don't really have a stage
right
now to really run with that anymore.
As a group, what it meant was it was our way to look at Black Diamond, the people that run Black Diamond and book Black Diamond, and say, we're, you know, five guys who care so much about this that we want to try to take an idea, put it on our back, and make it the biggest thing and try to elevate the company because of it.
Right.
And we got the go ahead to do that. And then, like, I know for me and for Edric, personally, it was a way because we had only done tag stuff. So it was a way for us to show management and to show fans and everybody, like, we can do this, the singles run. Edric can do it and I can do it and completely reinvent ourselves that isn't just reliant on the fact that we're a tag team. And it was a way to challenge myself and to challenge Edric, and then also to put the Fantastic Ones as a tag team on a pedestal, because for leading up to the feud with us, right, they were like a joke tag team. They did a lot of comedy spots where they weren't on the same page. So that was a way that feud made them serious and it made us serious.
Right.
So for Edric and I, it was a way to show, here's what we can do by ourselves. And for the Fantastic Ones, it was a way to show, here's what we can do as a serious top tag team in a company.
Right.
And that was the biggest thing that I think it meant for us, at least in my opinion,
right,
was a way to say, like, hey, look, we can be these guys and have good matches and do good work. And,
right.
And yeah, so that's, I think, what it was.
Now that, like I said, the run of that thing's kind of reached its peak and it's...
Here, yeah.
It's here, it's, you know... Edric, along the way, found who he is now right, in the new Ugly... Which fits him perfectly, just this...
Exactly.
Piece of garbage.
he's such a piece of trash.
Him going and finding that, where do you feel you are as an individual now? Do you feel you're really in a place where you feel like you're developing something, or do you still feel like you're trying to find who it is you are?
I think as a singles character, I built that the Great Bambino thing, and I think that, like, I really found a niche with that for myself.
Right.
And I really found something I was comfortable in. So, like, I feel like I've grown as a singles competitor,
mm-hmm,
in a way that I'm comfortable just taking a singles booking if I wanted to, if it was available, and I could go and do it. So I think the biggest thing I got out of all of this, and even with everything winding down, like, where I'm at, is my comfort level in myself and being able to trust myself. Because a lot of times with the tag team... With Edric being the boisterous one and Edric being the flashy one and me kind of being the grounded, simplistic, get the job done kind of guy.
Right.
There was that duality, but it was always the one would stand out. And Edric, you know, is always the one that kind of shines in that tag team and still is whenever we do it.
Right.
But for me, that was a hindrance on my comfort with myself and my mentality towards what I could bring to the table.
Right.
So what the singles run did for me was, and you know, Jake giving me a chance to have the singles run and put me in a certain spot, it gave me the mindset of, I can do this on my own, so now us together as a tag team is that much better because my mentality is where it needs to be.
Right.
I'm not, like, second fiddle. It's, we're here on the same... We bring different things to the table, but we deliver the same way, and I think it makes us better because my mindset's better.
Right.
Than it was three years ago.
Right. Right. I want to continue where we're at because I think we're in a good spot, but yeah, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with Ty Cross.
Mm. Oh, hey. I know what you're wondering, why I'm eating. Wasn't I supposed to buy all my groceries now with my Pro Wrestling Tees money? That lasted like 5 minutes. I can't do it. I can't. I came up with a new plan, though. From here on out, I'm only going to pay our rent with my Pro Wrestling Tees money. So, if you want my little furry kitties and my fiance to have a place to live, go to ProWrestlingTees.com/MattConnard. And buy a t-shirt. Buy several. Our rent's due in like a couple weeks, so get at it. ProWrestlingTees.com/MattConnard.
And we're back with Ty Cross. What I wanted to touch on for the break, which I wouldn't have had time because we would have went long. What I've noticed with you,
yeah,
since you and Edric broke up, especially since the Black Hand thing, and you tried to develop some sort of foundation with this Bambino thing you've been doing, is you've worked really hard, from what I noticed, to make up for what may or may not be there character-wise and really put it behind your mic work.
Right. Like, I appreciate that.
Like, you're not relying necessarily on, hey, I'm a guy, I'm the Bambino, look at me. You're like, you focused really hard on making sure that your promos are up to snuff and not relying on your character like some people will. So, tell me about the development there, because obviously as a tag team guy, you're not necessarily required to carry the load of a promo. Exactly. What's it been like for you since the split, since being on your own, developing your own voice and kind of finding that comfortability in cutting a promo as a singles competitor?
That's probably, and it all goes back to my comfort in my own abilities. Was I had to be able to grab a mic and go. And I think, again, it goes back to guys like Jake that gave me spots where I say, hey, can I cut a promo tonight? Yeah, keep it short. And that's like that window of getting better at it. So I was able to find what I had to say on any given time in character, and really hone how I would deliver that. Right. So a lot of it was my delivery and kind of honing in on just the way I deliver lines.
Right.
And the way I think on the spot.
Mm.
And I think another thing, and it goes back to Edric, you see, I hang on the fact that it is Edric. But again, he did a lot of the stick work when we were tagging.
Right.
So I didn't have to. I knew that I could, and I knew I was good at it, but I never really had to, because he could kind of handle that, because, again, he's a little bit louder. He was a little bit more of a go-getter that way. I just let him go.
Right.
But I knew I was able to cut a promo, especially I think I cut a better live promo than I do on camera, because like I don't have that comfort level of like stopping myself.
You're thinking time limits.
Exactly. And, you know. When I'm out there and then you're just going with emotion, it's a lot easier for me, and I got really good at that, I think. Mm-hmm. Like I have the comfort level to grab a microphone and go live. Just whenever. I don't have to think about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think that was the biggest growth for me on being able to cut a promo, is my ability to just grab and go. You don't have to think about it if you're in a spot. There was also the one time when the ring broke, and it was at Black Diamond, it was in the Eagles, and the ring broke. And
right.
Jake looked at Edric and I and goes, hey, grab the mic, go out there and just keep people entertained.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was one of those earlier moments where, even as a tag team, it made me feel good to know, like, Jake trusts us to go out there and be entertaining with a microphone because the ring's broken.
Right.
We were over, we could talk, and we got the chance to do that. So, and then the singles thing just kind of expedited the process of me getting better at it, because I no longer had to split time.
Right.
I could just step in and find out who I was.
Right.
with the Bambino character and with everything, just with myself.
Right. You got the opportunity to, sorry, it was a Beastman spotting.
I didn't think they were real.
I didn't either. It's like Sasquatch. You got the opportunity not too long after, as far as I know, was the Black Diamond Diamond Division title your first singles title?
Yeah. Ever.
Putting certain, like, dignifications of, like, one title versus another, it's all...
Right.
It's... They're props for storytelling.
Exactly.
What does it mean to you, whether it's Black Diamond, or IWC, or... the company, for someone to put that faith in you? What does it do for you as a performer to, like, really up your game? What does that do... what did that do for you, and... How has it, like, changed your mindset as far as, like, needing to, like, really amp that up as a character?
There's a confidence thing that comes with it. The titles, they don't mean anything, quote-unquote. But for me, like you said, the title always meant a spot. It was, I trust you to be here. I trust you to carry this.
Right.
Because to us it means one thing, but to the fans it means another. And I was trusted to be presented as the guy to carry this title.
Right.
So for me, whatever company, whatever title it is, that's what it means, is a promoter and a booker saying, we trust you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a big confidence boost with getting the Diamond Division title, because I was by myself.
Right.
I wasn't like, it wasn't you know, HPW and I'm with Keith, or Black Diamond and I'm with Edric.
Right.
It was me, and it was, you know, granted, the Black Hand story played into that, but I held the thing for a long time because I was trusted. My work, Jake trusted my work. Jake trusted my mic skills, and he trusted my punctuality and my ability to be there.
Right.
You know, a lot of the quote unquote B shows where I'm there, so I'm main eventing with the Diamond Division title. That was, you know, being trusted in that spot, and like Jake not saying, well, if, you know, he's going to be main events, then I need to put this title, if that title's going to be main event, I need to put it on somebody else because I need someone else that can carry a main event.
Mm.
Or, you know, if he's going to be in this spot on the card, I need the title on somebody that can make it better. So it was a real confidence boost. And anytime like tag titles or anything like that, it's like, hey, we're putting, and it's not always the case where the champion is the person that carries the division or whatever, but it's like, we're putting this trust in you representing our division. Diamond Division, Tag Team Division, Heavyweight Division, like, which I know you've you know, won heavyweight titles here and like All-Star and stuff, right?
Right.
Like, everywhere.
Yeah.
So you understand that, like, they're saying, we trust you to be put out there and to therefore produce.
Right.
You know, it's not like a trial and error. It is a trial and error thing, but it's not like a, let's go see how it goes.
Right.
I worked hard enough that I was trusted. Now let's go out there and do it.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the biggest thing for me is the confidence that comes with it of, yeah, it's just a prop, but, you know, when you're cast as the lead in a play, yeah, you're not really that person, but you're trusted to be the lead.
Right.
So if you're cast to be the champion on a show, they trust you to be that champion. Whether whether it's the top guy or a cowardly heel or however you do it, you're trusted to your performance is looked at as good enough.
Right.
And that's always my mentality is I want to be good enough. I want people to think that I was good enough. And
right.
That's what that gives me.
Right. It seems since I've known you, you spent most of your career proving people wrong.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
You seem like being around you and being in the trenches with you, I've noticed that you've been overlooked a great deal.
Appreciate that.
I'm not going to mention companies who have.
Yeah.
Because they don't fucking deserve it. But what does that do for you as a performer, having to go through trial after trial? And just have, whether you respect that person's opinion or not.
Right.
To bust your ass and then get nothing for it. And basically get passed up by people that don't deserve it as much as you do.
Yeah.
What does it do for you as a performer? Does it frustrate you? Does it put you down? Does it motivate you? What does it do for you?
It's stuff like that's frustrating. You know, feeling like you're held back or feeling like you're not, again, trusted.
Right.
Or that your work isn't what I view my work differently than somebody else views my work.
Right.
But the biggest thing that I've taken from this and where I think I've grown mentally a lot, and it goes back to the friendship and everything.
Mm.
I don't, a promoter's opinion or a booker's opinion versus the opinion of what I consider my peers.
Right.
The guys that I'm in the ring with. It's different. Someone might think you're marketable or not marketable, but then that doesn't mean that somebody else can't think that you can't go in the ring. So for me, the fact that like so many of the boys like being around me, like being in the ring with me.
Right.
I feel like when I'm on the rundown with somebody, it's not, ugh, you know what I mean?
Right.
Oh, crap. It's okay. Or like, I definitely think in Pittsburgh, Edric and I built that a lot of guys wanting to work with us, wanting to get in with us, especially now going on, you know, 7 years as a tag team. And, I'm coming up, I mean, you know, we're on the far side of it. But in January of next year, it'll be 8 years that I've been doing this. So
right.
For me now, there's guys that say, I want to wrestle you. Or like Argos telling RC, I want you to wrestle him because you'll get something out of it.
Right.
Just like I got something out of it.
Right.
That's what means a lot to me. I've kind of taken promoters and bookers' opinions and understood that my limitations of where I'm going to go are going to live and die with them. So I worry more about the people that I'm going to be out there with that I think will speak highly of me down the road. When I'm done with this and everything,
right?
You know, the guys that are still in it or the guys that have gone farther, them being able to say, like, I wrestled this guy, he was really good, means more to me than, you know, a promoter thinking I'm not marketable.
Right.
I know that's probably not the best attitude as far as trying to get myself out there and trying to go farther, but I'm at that point where I just want to have good matches with people that I respect, and I want people to respect me.
Right.
And I think there's a difference between being marketable or being having it bell to bell, as it's I've heard. But I think there's a difference between that and being respected in your craft. And for me, it's more important to be respected in my craft by guys like you. You know, we're friends, but we're friends because we're in this together and we've worked so much together.
Right.
And I like I feel like I have your respect. I have guys like Marcus and Jack and Peyton, or you look at like guys like Locked and Loaded, you know, Duke and Gannon. I love talking to those guys and being around those guys, and they tell me that they want to wrestle me and stuff. And
right.
Even if it's just blowing smoke, it feels good to me that guys say, I want to wrestle you, or I enjoy wrestling you.
Right.
That's what I'm going to, when I'm done, that's what I'm going to take away from it, more than somebody saying, well, we didn't think you had it because we don't think they're wearing flannel shirts because of you. We just think they're wearing flannel shirts.
Right.
You know, which I also heard and I disagreed with. But, you know, it's opinion and...
See, this is something I definitely want to talk about with you because you can relate to this. In wrestling today, what exactly is a character anymore?
Yeah.
What there's a real blurry line there.
Exactly.
When someone criticizes your character, as far as I don't know what you are, how many guys are just paint-by-number wrestlers?
Exactly.
Like, how many guys get pushed to the moon some places and don't even have a gimmick?
Yeah.
So you're going to sit and criticize somebody's gimmick. Look at your roster or look at cards elsewhere and explain to me some of the guys on top there.
Right.
What their characters are. You know, like, if the talent's there, obviously there's something there. The character's marketable, like the look. I'm ranting now.
No, you're good. No, dude, do it.
I'm just... This has been going on for years.
Right.
I would look at guys in certain states when I was trying to get bookings when I first started. And they were like, well, you don't really have a character, blah, blah, blah. And then I would look at the roster, and there would be guys who were just wrestlers.
Yeah. Shoot fighter.
Right. These guys were well-known guys.
Yeah.
More higher than me. But, I'm like, he's a wrestler.
Yeah.
He's just a wrestler. Like,
but you went out and developed, I think one of the best characters and one of the best gimmicks and one of the best, most marketable looks around, you know what I mean?
Depending who you ask, mostly.
I think it's marketable. I think you have a very pushable look, you know? A lot like for instance, Gory. Gory took the fact that he was undersized and flipped it on its head and said, if I'm going to be undersized, if people are going to look at me that way, I'm going to be... one of the most sought after, one of the most marketable, one of the most entertaining, unique, different cats in the area. And I think you did this very similar, which I think was why you guys worked so well as a tag team.
I appreciate that coming from you, buddy.
Giving the rub.
Well, that's another thing.
Shine them up.
It's another thing. Guys getting criticized for their size, and yet guys, if you're smart enough, know what your size is, know yourself and what you're going to be willing or what you're going to be able to do to build yourself up body-wise, and are you smart enough to work for your size.
Right.
Some guys don't do that. Right. Some guys look like me or are trying to toss people around like Brock Lesnar. It's not how that works. If a guy, you can criticize a guy's look as far as size. Like, I'm athletic looking, but I'm not huge.
Yeah.
I know that. But I work for myself.
You're a big cat.
Come on.
You're a big cat.
I'm not that big.
Go ahead. But you're a big cat. You're doing that girl thing where I'm fat.
No.
I'm just so fat.
No.
God, I just can't wear these because I'm just so fat. I'm not that big. I don't think I should toss people because I'm not that big.
You think I'm fat?
No. Go ahead. Sorry, I cut your rant and it's
No, you're fine. I'm just saying... if a guy's working for his size, if he's not going out of the limitations of reality,
right?
I mean, what's really the barometer there? Like, what are we? We're in a different place in wrestling now.
Yeah,
where we don't. It's not all about the 24-inch pythons anymore. Yeah. It's about athleticism. It's about putting good matches together. I just want to know from your standpoint, because I feel like I've been ramping up a 10-minute question at this point.
Okay, I cut in once in a while.
Where are you on the status of being, I guess, it'd be typecast, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I'm typecast just because I don't have a good look, so then therefore I'm not, like,
people. You think you're automatically overlooked because of that?
Yeah, like, people don't initially look at me and say, I bet he can go in the ring because I don't look like I can.
Right.
But then, like, I'll go out there and I'll surprise people.
Right.
And
like I've seen you do lately.
And I've heard a lot of, like, if you get a shot here, oh wow, they were really actually surprised that you're good, or you guys are good.
Right.
You know? Or I did get one compliment, which was, I don't know why you guys were working there. You're way better than that. Which really meant a lot. That made me feel really good.
Right.
So, and like, I've been in the ring with guys like, I mean, let's say like Nate Mattson. Nate Mattson's done a lot. He's been around forever.
Nate's great.
And he's done so much.
Yeah.
And that was up at Jodo Pro. PCW.
Yeah.
But that was at PCW, and Joe put us in that spot to wrestle Boone and Mattson in a tag match. And, I mean, Boone has done a lot and he's been around, but like Mattson has been in the ring with so many guys that are, you know, have gone and done such great things. And he's like, Joe considers Nate kind of, I think, like a measuring stick of like,
yeah,
or like the, let me know how that was.
He's the, I mean this better than it sounds. He's the brawler.
Yeah. Or like, he's like their X-Pac.
Yeah.
Like how you would go
out
there.
Okay, Xbox a better example.
Yeah, I got you, Nate.
Sorry, Nate.
Amazing Nate.
I love you.
But like, so like Joe puts us out there, and then we come back, and the feedback is positive from a guy like Nate Mattson.
Right.
Or a guy like Shirley Doe. Like, positive feedback from a guy like Shirley Doe that knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to the, I'm kind of redirecting back to where we were before, but like, that's what means more to me than blah, blah promoters saying, I just don't think he's got it. Because I know they're looking at me and I'm not 6'2" and I'm not a healthy 240.
Mm.
So they're looking at me and thinking, no matter what I produce in the ring, isn't going to reflect on the way I'm looked at outside of that.
Right.
And I get that, and I'm not as jaded by that as I was. But then you have guys like Shirley Doe saying everything was fine. I thought that was great. Or Marshall Gambino, we would love to have you down here.
Right.
You know what I mean? That means the world to me.
Right.
Guys that have been doing it for a long time, guys that have been successful, that have been in the ring with countless fantastic opponents that can look at me and
fantastic
say...
Fantastic ones.
But they can look at me and say, there was nothing wrong with it. I didn't think anything was wrong with that. I thought everything was great.
Right.
So that's what I'll take away from it in the long run, is that guys that were good at this thought I was good at this.
Right.
So that's my whole deal at this point.
All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we get back, we're going to wrap up with Ty Cross. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Wrestling Death. You can follow me at ReaperMetC, and you can follow my guest Ty Cross at Great Bambino Ty. And while you're over at iTunes listening to this, why don't you go rate and review and share it a little bit, you know? Tell a friend. Help us out here. Take a second. Literally a second. You could do it now. I bet you did it already, didn't you? I hope you did. All right, back to the show. And we're back with Ty Cross. Before we wrap up here, there's a couple more things I want to cover with you. As of late, you and Edric have kind of started doing more System Elite stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For first time in a while, at least seriously.
Yeah.
You guys cut this really funny promo with you guys on Edric's couch, the whole full house.
That was my couch.
That was your couch?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Oh no, yeah. I'm the, between the two of us, I'm the grown up with his own house and couch.
Okay. yeah, if you haven't seen that, search it out because it's really funny. Is this kind of turning into a new niche for you guys? Like, yeah. Is, like, you guys going to become, like, the nostalgia, like, pop culture tag team? Or what is this?
I hope so. That was a the Full House thing was a dumb idea that we've had for, like, 3 years that we just never shot. But everything good that we've ever done as a tag team started out as a dumb joke.
Right.
That we, using Hangin' Tough as our entrance theme.
Right.
It came on in the car one day on a trip to Pittsburgh. And I go, and we're just like, it'd be really funny if we use this as a theme. And then a year later, we use it as a theme, and it's super over and super awesome. So that's what the Full House thing was just a dumb idea. But we have a lot of other ideas.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's we're going to do more of those.
I hope so.
I like the feedback.
Right.
And I like getting positive feedback. So if you do more things that give you positive feedback, you get more positive feedback.
That's really what wrestling is these days, is just what's entertaining.
Exactly.
Like, you look at acts like the New Day. Like, it's not necessarily all, does this make sense?
Yeah.
Because nobody knows what the hell the New Day is.
I remember on the first podcast that we did together that nobody can listen to because you took them all down.
Yeah, they're gone. Deal with it.
We talked about everybody wants to be, let's say, Seth Rollins.
Right.
Nobody wants to be Santino Marella.
Right.
But you can be Santino Marella and still get over.
Right.
And still be taken seriously, I think. And still
make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And I think that was the niche that we're finding, is if everybody else wants to be this,
right,
well, let's be this instead. And then let's just try to use that and get super over.
Right.
So, yeah, that was the whole deal with that. And that's the deal with that. And
there's
that,
a one ending
that.
To that. Well, that was that.
But, yeah, that's where the idea came from, is, like, if we do stuff that we think is stupid and funny, enough people will probably think it's either stupid or funny.
Right.
But still be entertained by it.
Right.
And that's kind of where we finally decided, let's just shoot this.
Uh-huh.
It gave us an opportunity, too, because of the Good Brother Championship Wrestling show that we did for Peyton. That gave us an opportunity to shoot the promo.
Right.
And put it out there, so it wasn't just look like we're randomly making a video and throwing it out there. Right. But now that it's gotten positive feedback, we can do just random videos and throw them out there, and people expect them now.
Right.
So that was a really good thing for us to have the opportunity to do.
Right. All right. You want to play a game?
Yeah, we'll play a game. As long as it's not get punched in the head.
All right, let's play a game.
It's time to play the game.
Since this is a solo outing, I've went out into the locker room and recruited you an opponent.
Yeah, my favorite opponent.
Of Jake Garrick. How you doing, Jake?
I'm good.
You ready to kick Ty's butt?
Every day of my life.
That's what he lives for. It's what he gets out of bed for in the morning.
Good. All right. Name of the game today, gentlemen, is What's Your Finish? wrestling finishers, a lot of the time... make no sense.
No.
The name of them have almost nothing to do with who the person giving them are. Like, for example, here's the one that does make sense. Rock Bottom. You're not going to think, oh, that's Rocky Romero's finish. No, that's The Rock. We know that.
We know The Rock's finish.
If you didn't know wrestling, if you thought Famasser, you'd be like, Mr. Butts! No. Like, you wouldn't automatically... The non-casual fan wouldn't go... automatically Billy Gunn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's Billy Gunn.
Oh, that's Billy Gunn. Oh,
but
that's...
what if they remember Mr. Ass Billy Gunn?
Oh, that's what I'm saying. A lot of these younger fans.
Okay.
Like, these days. Of course, we know who the fuck Billy Gunn is.
I think I know who Billy Gunn is.
Oh, my God.
That's the one that would, I'm kidding. I know Billy Gunn is. I want to do the mom thing where it's like, is that the guy that says, I'm an ass man? Yeah, I know who Billy Gunn is.
You just really brought that segment down. All right.
I'm just an old mom.
Let's get into the game. So, what's going to happen? I'm going to say the name of the finish, and the first one to name the wrestler attached to it wins. There's five of them, so 3 out of 5 wins.
Is this shout and go, or are we just, like, raising our hand? Or?
Just raise your hand, because I don't want you yelling in my mic.
Yeah, I know.
That was going to be the fun part.
It'll get real intense. Hernandez! Sorry, I just broke your mic, Robbie.
God damn it.
Look at those, how the level spiked.
Yeah, I gotta go back and fix that. Thanks a lot.
Sorry.
All right. First one is Adam Smasher. Jake.
Adam Bomb.
Yes. It's one for Jake. Oh. You can be quicker on that.
I know.
All right, here's second one. Pearl River Plunge.
Is that Ahmed Johnson?
Yes, that is Ahmed Johnson. It's tied. Third one, Nutcracker Sweet. Jake Garrett.
Balls Mahoney.
Balls Mahoney.
Jake loves Balls Mahoney. Jake, like...
That's why I wanted Jake, because he knows something about the fucking business.
Yeah. Yeah, he does.
Like, you got to act quick on this one. I think Jake will get this one for you. Probably. Blonde Bombshell. Jake.
Chris Candido.
Yeah.
That was a top rope powerbomb.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jake wins.
Jake Garrett's the man.
We'll go ahead and do the fifth one just for fun.
Go nuts.
Stampede. Jake.
Dr. Dusty Williams. The Oklahoma Stampede?
No.
Oh.
No, it's not.
Die?
I mean, you can just redeem yourself here. You're not going to win regardless.
I know. Stampede.
Yeah.
Mantar.
Mantar.
I had to think, like, who would do... Oh, that would make sense if Mantar, the guy who wore a bull's head in the ring, would stampede somebody.
That's the most...
I have no idea what the move was.
That's the most excited anyone in the history of wrestling has ever yelled Mantar. Mantar! Oh my god, Mantar!
Alright, Jake, you get the call Ty the Shits now.
Like I wasn't going to. Ty, you're the shit.
Thanks, now I'm gonna go work in your main event.
By proxy. You're only there because... You're only there because of what's going to unfold on the show.
I'll take it.
Thanks for playing with us, Jake.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, bud.
I'll take this.
Now let me go finish trying to book this show.
All right, Ty. Before we wrap this up, you got anything you want to plug? Social media? You got shows coming up? Actually, don't do that because you're my rainy day spot. And
I will do shows.
By the time I put you on, the shows could be over.
Yeah.
So just plug anything you got.
I probably don't have a ton of shows coming up anyway.
Let's be honest.
Let's be realistic here.
Yeah.
I'm on Facebook as Ty Cross.
Ooh.
And it's Ty, the traditional spelling, not like Ty Dillinger. There's no E at the end, it's just T-Y. But so Ty Cross, I'm on Facebook. And then I'm on Twitter as at Great Bambino Ty.
You can't remember your own Twitter handle?
I don't ever punch it in anymore.
Jesus Christ.
I'm on Instagram as well.
Let me get my phone out. What the fuck? God, you're the worst.
I'm on Instagram as Big Bad Ty Cross. Because I think I was still doing...
You have like three different names.
Yeah, I was still doing the Big Bad Wolf thing.
You can change that, can't you?
Eh, I'm not worried about it. Oh, I got... There's over 260 people that follow me on here. I can't just go flip the switch on them like that. And then I'm on Twitter. I think it's, at Great Bambino Ty.
For Ty Cross, I'm Matt Connard. Till next time, stay cool, ghouls. You still have Vine app?
Yeah.
No, it's dead.
I don't care. I like it.
Does it still work?
I think so, yeah.
Have you tried it?
I have AT&T, and I have the plan where it's not unlimited data. They just don't charge you when you go over. They slow it down.
Right.
So I have no idea right now because my data's slow.
You're going to have to report back to us.
I will.
If the Vine app still works.
It's
dead.
By the time... I have 6 notifications on my Vine app that I haven't looked at.
Yeah.
I also have 82 missed emails that I don't look at.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what's in my phone. So as you can see, I have my main page apps. That's DraftKings, because Edric and I were doing fantasy sports through DraftKings with each other. Pokemon Go, the Jib Jab app, which is just fun. And then I have stuff that I don't like really use. Like, I don't use Jib Jab. I don't use Prisma really anymore, although I should. I have Etsy for like when I want to shop for stuff on Etsy. And then I have this retro VHS app, which is just funny for taking like videos and stuff. But then
we had such a good conversation. Why do you wait till the end?
To ruin it?
Yes!
Because you can cut all those out.
Oh my god.
I think you can. Did I leave you an opening to cut everything out?